Session number 9955, reel 6.
Mr. Calvert, reel 6. If you weren't on guard duties and you weren't doing a recruiting march, what other sort of duties would you have?
Well, in the battalion, you were then looked upon as being trained. You finish your training. Apart from the usual daily parades and guard mounting and all what took place, you were more or less finished about 11 in the morning, parade, and the rest of the day was yours. And it was, the motto was, in bed or out of barracks. In other words, everybody went to bed in the afternoon. And you had a pass which allowed you to stay out while midnight. And, of course, after tea, you used to go out, five or six of you, four of you, and have a walk round Sloane Square along to Hyde Park or along the Strand, or have a Leicester Square and have a look around London. But you'd no money, you know, it was 7 shillings a week. And by the time you'd bought some soap and cleaning material and polish for your boots and all that, and been in the canteen and had a drink of tea and a cake and that, by about Monday morning you were lucky if you had any money left. So it meant you just went out and walked round to pass the time. Or you went in the facilities provided in the barracks, which was a library. And
did you use the library much?
Yes, I went in. And then there was a canteen, dry canteen, and the wet canteen.
What sort of books did they have in the library?
Military history, a lot. You could read about campaigns going back to Crimean War and South Africa, and a lot of books had been donated, I suppose, some various officers.
Did that interest you, that side of things?
Yes, I was interested in reading some of the exploits of people who had been in previous wars. Yes, I think it was very interesting reading military history. And then
the dry canteen, would that be fairly well similar to the dry canteen?
Yes, you could get, I think I got a cup of tea, a piece of bread, a piece of cheese and some pickles on it for about threepence. Just a snack. Or you could get rock buns. The quality had deteriorated owing to the submarine menace. Wasn't as good quality. It was, I think they'd been manipulated with various other things to spread it out like bread.
You still didn't go to the wet canteen?
No, never.
Any other recreations you could do? Any organised sport?
There was a Burton Court. Was a place just outside the barracks. There was a big field there, and there was football and cricket, and you could go there, although a lot of the soldiers were under canvas in owing to the barracks being overloaded. But there was cricket there, and there was football, and you could go and watch them. There'd be matches arranged. And
did you play? Or did
no, I never took any part in cricket or football. There were too many... men there who were up to the were professionals had joined.
So it was a good standard you could watch?
They had a very good standard, yes. Yes.
Would you often watch them?
Then they were boxing with some good boxers at that time, and there was London Championship boxing. You could go in and watch that. Then there were concerts given at evening. The officers would bring in people And we'd have there'd be a piano going and some singing and all that, and some chorus singing. It was a very good entertainment. But that was about once a week.
Were you? A lot of that seems to be watching, not participating, if you see what I mean. Was that mainly what it was?
Yes, we weren't with too many professionals, shall we say, cricket players.
So there wasn't the
standard I had, I mean, I was hopeless. So it was all watching and cheering your team on.
Had many of your number 14 squad, had many of them come to the same unit as yourself?
Yes, but they were all split up in different platoons and different companies.
Were the new lot that you were in?
Yes, they were all who'd been in months before and were waiting to be sent abroad.
Did you get on with them as well?
Yes, we were a good, happy, shall we say, family together. All helped one another and made life as easy as possible.
The NCOs you still found fair?
Yes. All you got used to was the shouted commands. I mean, that was what you expected. But apart from that, they were very fair.
Did you see more of the officers now that you're actually in a battalion?
Yes, you saw your platoon officer.
What do you think of
him? Every day. Well, they were all supposed to be a little bit above everybody else, because they were public school type. Now, I found them very nice. I find, in my opinion, they were the true gentlemen. They would go out of their way to help you. If they saw on the march that you were beginning to feel a bit, they'd get someone probably to carry a rifle for you. Chap who were up and locked stronger than you. Yes, you had to recognise who they were. They were officers, you had to recognise that. But apart from that, off parade, they'd come to see that you was all right, wherever you were. You were settled in, and you used to come round meal times, any complaints, which of course there never were. Didn't pay. So, from my experience with all the officers I ever came in contact with, they were very fair. They were proper gentlemen.
Did the ones with the 5th that you had at Chelsea, do you think they were militarily competent?
Well, they were all like us. They were all more or less, apart from a few who returned owing to wounds and unfit for further service. They were mainly from the training, Sanders, I believe.
So they were waiting to go out as well?
They were waiting, yes, and they were having to be trained as well as us. So what they knew were probably not much more than what we knew, apart from map reading and discipline procedures and all that.
Now, I believe you were sent up to Harlow on Thames.
Marlow, yes. We went there for... we followed the 4th Battalion, which had been sent out to form the Guards Division. Previous to that, the 3rd Battalion, which was a regular battalion, didn't go out either until 1915. Later on, we were told they were kept at home because of the likelihood of civil unrest. So they kept back.
Who told you that?
The supporter told us from... came through one of the officers. That the 3rd Battalion, plus other... about a third of the total expeditionary force, I understand, was kept back in England. And only sent out in 1915 because civil unrest was thought to be there, but it wasn't. They all became very patriotic. Of course, German shops were smashed up by them.
Did he say anything else about it, this officer?
No. It was just a passing comment why the 3rd Battalion had just gone out.
So this was a period... You were forming the division, a guards division. Was this a period of divisional training then?
No, I didn't go out to the division. We were in Marlow on Thames in this camp for about a month, where we had field training there and...
What was the field training?
This artillery formation again and forming line and running and dropping and going by sections, so many that, and then, you know, supposed to draw the enemy fire to that, and you then be able to return the fire. That sort of thing. Field training it was.
Still mainly open warfare stuff?
Yes, we were in tents. It was a beautiful holiday for me. I never felt better in my life living under canvas, and the food and the fresh air and the training. Everybody agreed it was a real nice part of your training, soldiering.
You weren't on manoeuvres though, it was just...
We'd only accompany strength. It was limited to what we could do.
And then you went back to Chelsea?
Then we rejoined the battalion and another company at out. Also, we went to Croydon. We marched to Croydon for a week, a company of us, for night manoeuvres.
What did that involve?
Going out at night into open country and finding your way and... keeping in touch with one another and acting as a proper trained unit out in the darkness.
Did the unit cope? Did the company cope well?
Yes, yes, we.
Which company was it, by the way? We didn't get the letter.
It was number 3 company. Third company. You see, I'll tell you about that later.
Okay.
Well, we then marched back to Chelsea Barracks, and we were considered then to have been as fully trained as it was possible in England.
So in England you did nothing about trench warfare, no standing rifle practice, no bombing?
No, that was when you went to Le Havre, the camp in France.
Right, we'll come to that then. I think you spent a Christmas in England, you spent Christmas 1915.
Yes, in Chelsea Barracks.
What can you remember about that? Any special ceremonies? In
yes. There was extra food given. We had a real good Christmas dinner. And all the NCOs served it. Your sergeant, your corporal, and lance corporal, and your sergeant major... was like overseeing things, and they brought all the food to you and took away your empty plates, and there were beer supplied to those who wanted it. It was a very nice Christmas. It was partly decorated, I think, was the barrack room, and it was about 40 in a barrack room at that time, 35, probably 40.
Now, you're now moving into 1916. Were you... You mentioned earlier people were volunteering to get abroad. Did you ever think of volunteering to try and get away early, or how did you feel about all that?
No, it was always drilled into me by the older chaps, never volunteer. So I just waited while it was my turn. And it was beginning of 1916. I just forget the month. Probably March, I think.
Are there any more incidents or... things that you can remember before you actually got sent away? Anything happened to you at Chelsea?
At that time, King George V had made it known that he liked all his members of the household brigade to have a moustache. Well, of course, they all started growing. Well, I couldn't. Well, you can imagine me stood amongst chaps. I was outstanding.
Seeing the photograph,
yeah,
yes.
They came. Sergeant had come to me and say, "You're not grown one then." No, sir. No, no sound. Ill-shaved. Because I had some little adorn here. I didn't need to shave it. I had to start using a razor then. I didn't like it. It was a cutthroat type. So you get extra fatigue, which meant going into the sergeant's mess, peeling potatoes or some other for 1 hour. I was fairly often on that because I was outstanding, I suppose.
Was there any other young ones having that problem, or
no? No, no. I think I was about the only one. What's I mean? At 16, I couldn't attempt to grow anything. It hadn't come to that, had it, in the body structure. I took it all in good part.
Anything else happened?
No, I just carried on the usual routine.
You got drafted sometime roughly spring, March,
yeah,
somewhere around there. How did that come about? Can you tell me?
Well, parade. You paraded. The company was parading. Names were called out. Step forward one pace. Then when you'd all been checked and that, you were formed up and taken and issued with a lanyard, they call them, with a big knife, which is put into this pocket. And then your kit was inspected and you were informed you'd parade at such and such a time, and then the inspecting officer would come round and have a word with every man, more or less. Are you married? Are you single? And all that. And he stopped and looked at me. He said, how old are you? I said, old enough to go abroad, sir. I'm a regular. He passed on. Once you say you're a regular, they must think that it's in order. I'd got used to saying I'm a regular. And then you were marched off, headed by the regimental band and followed by wives and relatives along Buckingham Palace Road, Birdcage Walk, Waterloo Station. There you entrained for Southampton. You were put on the troop ship, and it sailed when it was dark, and you were escorted by British destroyers.
Just to break in, were you given any embarkation leave before you were set off?
Sometimes, if you wanted it, you might get 2 days.
Did you take leave this time?
No, I didn't bother.
So, what do you remember about the journey across?
Well, on this troop ship, they were selling the tea with the crew at inflated prices and pies. They must have made a fortune, the prices were charging. Well, you see, you hadn't had a meal. You might have had a bully beef sandwich given in the shed where you waited to embark and some tea. And if you were had a good appetite, of course you wanted something, and you'd, all your English money then would be dispensed with on board that, because when you got to France it would be no good. So you spent up and paid the prices, and they knew that, did the crew. During the night you I stopped I think in a position I could look out, I could see out, and you could see the two destroyers signalling one to the other with the that method they had light, forget the name of it, a signal lamp. You got into a larve just as dawn was breaking, and after a time you disembarked and you were marched through Le Havre town itself up to the camp, which was a few kilometres from the town. Then you again paraded and checked, and about 10 or 12 of you sent to a tent. And then you were taken the next day up to the training ground where there were trenches and all the things you needed to know, how to barb wire and...
What were these things? Could you take me through them one at a time? What sort of practice trenches had they laid out?
Well, there'd be a section of you go in and you'd be told that your area was so and so and you'd be there and you'd be on sentry and the rest of you would be keep your equipment on and your rifle loaded and you'd be within easy reach of the sentry just kicking somebody to let you know there's an alert on somewhere, that sort of business. And then you were given practice with bombs.
What did you do with bombs then?
You had to throw them. You had to get them.
Were these Mills bombs by then?
Yes, there was some other type of bomb as well. I forget, like a small pear-shaped affair. And you had to have them ready. So as you let them go, they were ready to start them. Firing pin going into action or whatever, the detonator, whatever it was. Of course, you had to get down this way and point the direction. This was the way, and then let go, and the higher you threw it, the farther, the better it was.
An overarm action.
Yes, it was a nice way of being able to throw it, but mind you, you had equipment on as well, so you were restricted.
When you... Did you practice throwing them, then?
Yes.
Did you practice throwing them from trenches?
Yes, over the parapet. Right over.
Were they live?
Yes.
Were there any accidents, or were you warned about the danger of dropping them in the trench or hitting the side of the trench?
Your instructor was always by your side, and he watched every movement, and if he thought anything was wrong, he'd probably push you as hard as he could that way and go, because there was so many seconds between... It exploded. I think it was about four. I think somewhere about four.
Were there any incidents while you were training?
No.
How far did you reckon you could throw on them?
Well, not very far. So I never became a member of a bombing squad. I hadn't the strength then to throw it as far as some of these chaps who were... broad and well built big men. You got in all the instructions about trench warfare, how to build a trench, you know, fill sandbags and the method of laying them.
What did they tell you about that then?
Well,
was there any specific method of filling them?
There were two of you, one held it while the other, and then when you got it in position, you had a piece of wood. Square wood on a handle and you batted it into position, made it solid. Because if a sandbag was hard, it is very rare a bullet would go through one sandbag. It would more or less stop it. If it was well packed, so you would instruct it to pack them hard as protection. Then we had gas training.
What was that?
It was like a two-eyed piece flannelette thing with a little tube, and it just went over and down here, and it was impregnated with some chemical, and that was your protection.
What was it like wearing one of these?
It became very hot, but you could occasionally just lift and taking a little breath of fresh air, because as you know, gas doesn't stay over you all, it moves around. So,
did you go through a gas chamber? I mean, did they have any?
Yes, they had a place built and there were a kind of a blanket at each end. You went in and somebody checked you in and somebody checked you at the other end to make sure that you hadn't stopped in. So it was fairly well organised to give you insight into all what you could expect.
What about actual digging? You've said about the trench.
Yes,
the did you practice digging trenches or repairing them?
No, we did a little repairing at times and filling the holes where bombs had dropped and all that sort of thing. It was...
They got used to the pick and the entrenching.
Yes, it wasn't hard work, really. I mean, you loaded the shovel in accordance to what you could move. If you only wanted half a shovel foot, they never bothered. It was up to you. But then the day came when you paraded and... They started at one end and the biggest men were on the flanks. And there's some chaps that are 6 foot two and three. And
was this the draft or
yes,
the whole
the
camp?
Draft.
And
just,
you were all
just the camp. There were just grenadiers in that camp. They all had their own camp. And these chaps had been sent to the 1st Battalion. What was known as the King's Company, the biggest men, tallest men they could get, went into that company. And then the others be sent to the 2nd Battalion, then some to the 3rd and some to the 4th. I went to the 4th Battalion, number 2 company. You went in castle trucks, and it took you quite a time.
What was the journey like in the castle trucks?
Well, you'd just room to get down with your equipment and... If you're lucky, if you could sit down or comfortable, or your legs were in somebody else's way. So they were castle trucks. They were very difficult. Owing to the numbers they tried to put in.
How long did the journey take?
Oh, it could be anything up to 18 hours, 24 hours.
What arrangements for food and toilets did they?
They gave you sandwiches, bully beef and bread, and you had a. You had water in your water bottle. That.
What about going to the toilet? How did you?
Open the door and. That was the only way. Pass water through. The other was, of course, barred. There was no other way. Unless you'd brought a container with you, which sometimes they did. It was a long journey. Then we arrived at. Popperinge.
So you were on your way to Popperinge. About what month was this? How long had you been at
that was about April. It'd only been a few days, a week, probably no more.
So it's intensive training.
Yes, it was.
What happened when you arrived at Popperinge?
I was taken to battalion headquarters and I was told to go to the platoon, I forget the platoon, in number 3 company.
Number 3, not number 2.
I was the only newcomer to that platoon. And they were in, they took me to join the platoon and it was in a cart store place. Horse-drawn cart was stored in it. And
in Popperinge?
Yeah, in Popperinge, in the square itself it was, right in the square. And I was the last one to go in, and I got the outside. And there was stone floor, and I had a great coat, no blanket, and that's the night I had to sleep.
Did you have a ground sheet? Have they issued you with that sort of?
Yes, that was a ground sheet where I used my great coat to keep warm. From the stone, and it was open. It was an open place, and it was a very uncomfortable night. Cold.
Could you get to sleep?
No. Laid awake all night.
How about the rest of them?
They were sleeping. They were well protected. They were right inside. I was outside, and the other side, it got a piece of wood up. We found some wood to block it off. So. And they had blankets as well.
You were the only newcomer. So.
I was a newcomer, so of course, naturally, that's what happened.
Did any of them give you any advice or help you in these first days with the the company?
2 days after, I was in on the way to the trenches.
Before you went to the trenches, did they try and did they give you any?
Yes, they gave me a lot of knowledge as to what to expect.
What sort of things did they tell you?
Keep your head down. Never stand out in the open. Always get behind some place, no matter where you are. Protect yourself. Or lie down if it's possible. And take as much food as you can get hold of with you. And cigarettes if you're a smoker, which I didn't smoke. And also take more water if you could carry it. If you'd a spare water bottle or had a German bottle like some of them had, use that. And because water were very scarce.